people genuinely don't know what they're entitled to. So can sometimes remain in a toxic relationship because they genuinely believe if I leave, I leave with the clothes on my back.
Hello and welcome to V for Visionaries podcast with me, Richard Ward. I am an award-winning serial entrepreneur with over 35 years experience in the beauty and media world. And I've built and sold many businesses. But today I'm most interested in finding out who are the movers and shakers in business, what makes them so successful, and why certain cream rises to the top.
And me, Rosamund Stenhouse. I am an award-winning fourth generation of entrepreneurs. I have spent several decades working with all aspects of land, delivering new towns and large-scale landmass for development. I now work with national and international entrepreneurs, scaling, improving sales, and expanding their business. This is the podcast where bold ideas meet business brilliance.
Yes, and each week we'll be sitting down with trailblazing entrepreneurs and industry leaders to uncover the strategies, the stories, and the secrets behind some of the world's most exciting business ventures. Tracy Maloney is a divorce lawyer specializing in family law. She has a huge social media profile. She also appears regularly on radio shows and many TV shows. She's one of the few celebrity divorce lawyers in the country, and she truly lives up to her name, the Legal Queen. Welcome, Tracy Maloney.
What a great introduction. Thank you so much. And good morning to you both.
Good morning to you.
Morning, Tracy.
So now what we usually like to do is take you right back to the start. How on earth did you get in to become the divorce lawyer you have? Do you have lawyers in the family? You can take it from there.
So no, there's no lawyers in the family. My first degree wasn't even law. It was English literature and business studies. Got married very young. I think I was 21 when I got married and started a family. So then came out of work for about 9 years. Decided and spoke to my husband and said, you know what, if I'm going to go back to work, it's got to be worthwhile. In other words, I didn't want to be picking up a pay packet and handing it to childcare. Do you know what I mean? So I decided, right, I've got to retrain. I wanted a real challenge. So it was a decision between medicine and law. And I decided on medicine. Went and sat chemistry and thought, no, this isn't for me. I don't have a great stomach at the best of times. So I thought, no, all the gore and the blood and all the lumps and bumps, not for me. So quickly changed my mind and transferred over to a law degree. And it went from there. All of that happened actually outside of the UK, because by that time, Brendan and I had moved with the children to Australia. So I started my legal career once I'd qualified as a barrister. So I was a barrister, a family law barrister in Australia. Our eldest was starting senior school. We decided it's time to come home. And because they were getting bigger, as a barrister, you tend to be in court all day and then you're prepping for court the next day in the evening. And I didn't want that. I thought, actually, no, I'm going to transfer over to being a solicitor so that I can work during the day and have family time at night.
So you were qualified with the Australian law and then you came back to the UK to...
Yes. But yeah, they're essentially the same, if I'm being honest. So it was very easy for me to transfer across, yeah.
What made you decide to go into the divorce arena?
Well, family law sort of found me. When you first qualify, I think in any area, you accept the work. I was a baby barrister in chambers and I was accepting whatever the other barristers would give me. And I did a couple of crime cases, but it was small, petty crime. And then I just started to get family briefs. I was in a family set with other barristers around me, family barristers, and it kind of found me, really. And I just grew to love it.
So how long have you actually been a family lawyer, family divorce lawyer? Are you a divorce lawyer? Is that the right way to bill you?
Well, so the Americans call it lawyers because in America, they don't have barristers and solicitors. They do it all. So if you qualify as a lawyer in America, you are in the office as a solicitor, but you're also in court as a barrister. In England and Australia, we're very traditional. So we have solicitors and barristers. So I suppose if we're going to be technically correct, I'm a family law solicitor. But if I was in the States, I'd be a lawyer.
So is it primarily divorce? Is this the crux of what you do?
So, yeah. So family law covers divorce, the finances that then flow from divorce. So who gets the house and the car and the business and children. So it can also cover child custody, residence contact. It can also cover, there is a smaller fourth element of what we call injunctions. So non-molestation orders to prevent somebody, maybe a victim of domestic abuse, you know, to stop them or to keep them safe. But that's our four main areas of family law. Yeah.
Tracy, before we dive into the divorce sector and family law, can I just quickly cover your childhood? Was it did you have a pleasant, lovely picket fence, wonderful childhood? Or was it anything that prepared you for the type of work you deal with now, which is highly stressful? You're dealing with potentially people who are very bitter. It's very cantankerous. Is there anything in your life that has prepared you to become the legal queen, the woman you are today?
So I think that my upbringing was very working class, had a mom that, you know, held down two or three jobs, had a dad that was in the construction industry, saw both of them working sort of 7 days a week. I'm the eldest of five, so a lot of the responsibility to help with my siblings fell to me, you know, getting them, helping mom get them ready for school in the morning. It was very hand to mouth. Mom and dad didn't have a lot. So I think that working class, that traditional, if you want anything, you've got to get off your backside and go and do it. You roll your sleeves up, you get on with it. And more importantly, I think you take responsibility. You know, my family were never ones to sit back and sort of blame others. If we want more, we have to get up and earn it. Do you know what I mean? It's up to you. Good. So always pushed from a very young age to go and get a job, you know, even after school. In the local bakery, I remember, was my first job, I think, at 14, just, you know, dishing out the cakes and putting the money in the till. So, yeah, that was, I think, the origin that's kind of led me to where I am.
So how long have you been a family lawyer then? About 20 years, is it? A bit more than that?
Yeah, so just over about 22 years. And prior to getting the law degree, what I decided to do was to go and be a legal secretary. Okay. So I was a legal secretary for about 3 years.
Is that a natural progression?
No, it's not, because you don't need a law degree to be a legal secretary.
Right.
But I just wanted to get right into the heart of a real busy law firm see if actually I could do that. You know, could I do it from a wife's perspective, a mother's perspective, from my own mental capacity? And yeah, loved it. Just loved it.
How amazing.
Do you think that was brought about by the hyper responsibility that was taught to you as a child?
Yeah, absolutely. I think like mom and dad weren't at home a lot because they worked. So that responsibility that I had from a very, very young age, really, it stayed with me. And I think it's really important.
Which area of the country was this?
Yeah, we were born and bred in Birmingham.
I detect that beautiful black country, slight black country, which was a slightly posh tint to it, Tracy.
Yeah. She is the queen.
You're talking queen. To two southerners here. Tracy, so I tell you what was really intriguing me, like it does with any business. So you qualify, you decide to become a divorce lawyer. Okay. How quickly are you building up your clients, and is it a long haul process?
So I think when I first started as a barrister, it happened very quick because the senior members of the team would give me what they just didn't have the time to do. And they, because they were senior, you know, a lot of time Queen's Counsel back then, they would have so much work coming in. It grew very quickly. I was in court every day, all day, every day. I think what then assisted me is when I came back to the UK, I was a very attractive candidate when I then applied for jobs as a solicitor because I came with all of this advocacy experience. So the firms that I was applying for positions within were saying to me, absolutely, because not only can you run the cases, but if we can't get a barrister when we need one, we can then send you to court. So whilst I didn't plan any of that, it really stood me in good stead because the work has always come in, whether I've been employed or whether I've had my own business.
Do you see yourself as an entrepreneur today, or do you see yourself
absolutely.
As...
Absolutely. Okay. And I can now look back with complete confidence and think it was all meant to happen. And the reason that it was meant to happen is because it was teaching me the mistakes. Because they're not really mistakes, are they? Well, they are, but they're my mistakes. I own them. And they're sort of learning tools. Absolutely. Yeah.
Do you know,
absolutely.
Tracy, I often say if you stripped an entrepreneur down, and you could see the hidden bruises and the impacts and the bloody fights that they've been in that has got them to where they are today. Yeah. You know, it's that caption you often see on social media, the iceberg, you know, the big iceberg. And below the surface of the water is all the punches. I always think entrepreneurs are street fighters at the end of the day, because you need to keep your wits about you. There's a lot of people out there looking to take you down. But there's a lot of good people, but there's more, the majority would rather see you, you know, in a hole buried. I think you're very clever because, you know, I first found you looking at your social media on Instagram, The Legal Queen, and I was very taken by how down to earth, how honest, how transparent, and I've done years from my background in land dealing with lawyers of every breed you can imagine. And I was immediately struck of, my God, this woman is different. Wow, she's really cool. And you're addictive to watch, actually, because your presentation and the way you deliver, you give such valuable information. I mean, especially with the sector you cover. Just going into divorce, there's one thing I want to ask you, because I think this is very prevalent. What is worse? What is worse, the actual divorce, or it seems to be a very high proportion of people turn very bitter, there's hate. And I'm not sure if it's the divorce that takes them out or the hate and the anger.
Yeah, or I was just gonna add to that there, Rosie, I think, or indeed the solicitors. Sadly, there are a lot of my colleagues, shall we say, who have big billable targets.
Yes,
and because of that, they have a target to meet, you know, that's their sort of job requisite. We're all measured on performance when you're an employee. And because of that, that can add to it. You know, if a couple, so my starting point with any couple will be kitchen table discussions. Try to sort out as much as you can yourself. Because where you have built something together, it's only right that you get to carve that up together. Now, if we have 10 things that need carving up and you're able to do 3 around the kitchen table, great. Because then we can leave the other 7 to perhaps mediation. And let's say we leave mediation and we've managed to carve up another 3. So now we've managed to do 6 on our own and we've got 4 left for the solicitor. I think where things can go downhill very quickly is where one of the parties takes all 10 issues into the solicitor and the solicitor sees, right, okay, let's go. Actually, we need to get into court with this one. We're going to go back to the side. You're entitled to everything. And they kind of give them a false set of expectations, which then drives them forward and creates this animosity. Sorry, Richard, go on.
I was just on that. I mean, are you saying, just for our listeners out there, are you saying that some divorce lawyers are actually premeditating that? Well, they're actually deliberately taking them down the wrong path to earn a lot of money?
Absolutely. Absolutely, wow. I am. Absolutely, I am. I've had many, many a letter from my opponent that's unnecessary, that's aggressive, that's obnoxious, that simply wants to make the application for the sake of making the application. And you quickly identify when you've been in this game a long time that actually that person has got a big billable target to hit. You know what I mean? For example, keeping negotiations going when clearly these parties are just polar opposites. So in that instance, let's not spend 20 grand negotiating. Let's set a budget of 2. If we haven't made any progress after 2000, well, then we'll go to court, let the judge decide. But at the times I get people coming to me and they'll say, Trace, and I'm not even joking you, they'll say, I've spent £30,000 with my solicitor. It's been letters backwards and forwards for the past 2 years. And I'm no further forward. What do I do? And my response will always be, go to court. Oh, I don't want to go to court. It's so expensive. It will be a hell of a lot cheaper than keeping negotiations going on and on. So to answer your question, Rosie, I'm very passionate about, especially where children are involved or we have a long marriage, It's all about damage control. If you can't do it yourself, let's do it with the most amount of dignity and respect that we possibly can. I appreciate that we all have to make a living, but not at the expense of causing a couple that have been together. You know, we've got to remember once upon a time they walked down the aisle and they truly loved each other. That is still there. We've just grown apart. So let's do that with dignity, would be my view.
I mean, you're describing integrity, which is the paramount fundamental, you know, foundation of really all business in a good business owner's brain. There is, you know, the billable hours. I mean, can I ask you, and I already know the answer, but if you were in a situation where you're an employee and you had a big billable hours that we all know they're under, would you go down that road or would you stay with integrity of what you're describing?
No. But if I was an employee, my first challenge would be to say to my boss, based on the client base I have, I can't reach that billable target. So we have two options. We either reduce my billable target or you're going to have to give me double the amount of cases. Because I'm not willing to take a case and eke £10,000 out of it when actually the true value of that case is only £5,000. Do you know what I mean? So we either reduce my target or we get double the amount of clients.
New lawyers, please listen to Tracy.
Well, you know, just listening to you, Tracy, obviously having done a little bit of research and just watching all your social media and that, you know, it's no surprise to me why you are forging the name that you have and why actually I think you should be called not only the legal queen, but I think the people's queen. That's what you are. But you really are. And that's why you are ripping it up social media wise, because you're such a true person. And there must be hundreds of thousands of people that are watching your post thinking, oh my God, this is just a breath of fresh air. But, you know, I shouldn't think you, I'm surprised you've got enough time to do anything. I mean, you must be just constantly
clearly.
But that is just such a breath of fresh air. One of the things I just think for our listeners, there will be people, I thought, as I was thinking about you this morning and just reading up on you, I was thinking, this podcast is not just going to be interesting for people that are getting divorced. You know, half the country that are married, probably two thirds of the country, are having problems in their marriage and they're not even talking about divorce. Yeah,
absolutely.
So what I was thinking, this is, which is hardly surprising why a family lawyer, why, you know, you're all so popular. But what are the main, could you just list me, I'm sure there's 50, but could you just list me so maybe five of the main points, the problems that people have?
So I think affordability is definitely the first thing. People automatically think that they have to have a lawyer to help them. So the first mental block is, I can't afford it. I just cannot afford it. Intimidation, you know, being a lawyer and mixing with lawyers, you don't think that you are intimidating. And when I started the social media journey, it became very obvious to me that people are very intimidated by lawyers. So that can be a second mental block. The third, I think, reason is that people genuinely don't know what they're entitled to. So can sometimes remain in a toxic relationship because they genuinely believe if I leave with the clothes on my back. Because I was the one that looked after the children, the house is in his name, I'm not entitled to anything. So I think knowledge. I think maybe the fourth reason is that it can be very overwhelming. You know, a lot of times I get emails from people to say, I don't know where to start. I've listened to your videos and they're great, but now I'm more confused than ever. Do I need a divorce and a financial order? Will the divorce sort out the children as well? But if I leave straight away, am I going to be entitled to any money? So it can be very overwhelming that then a lot of people can think, oh, I'll deal with it another time. We'll just leave it and I'm sure it'll be fine. And, you know, we'll get together. And then of course, it's not always knowing, well, yes, I need a divorce, but who do I go to speak to about that? Can I get some help from the court system? Can I just go to Citizens Advice? You know, should I just be speaking to friends and neighbours? Or maybe a lot of people will turn to their pastors or their, you know, religious mentors for that. And then what happens is we get a lot of confusing information out there. Do you know what I mean? So the whole purpose of the social media, and this wasn't my plan at all, it was simply having had my own business, which ended badly, I then went into a very corporate world and was running a nationwide business that after 7 years, I became very burnt out. So it was, I was having a break. I'd handed my notice in and contractually couldn't work for anybody else for 3 months. And it was during that break, my sons were the ones that said, answer a couple of questions about divorce. It's quite interesting. And it was quite by accident that I then began to see, wow, there's a whole nation out there that actually are fully unaware of what it is they need to do. Men, not just women, but men are feeling trapped. Men aren't being allowed to have relationships with their children. And they're going home at night thinking, I don't deserve a relationship with my son. And it just really opened my eyes to the possibilities of spreading information, knowledge, signposting, essentially, which then led to this work coming in. Because people then started to say, I get it, I know exactly what I've got to do, but can you do it for me? And it literally started in my small office at home and then just grew and grew in the space of 3 years.
Tracy, I'm just thinking, I mean, if you look back in history, you go to sort of, let's take Henry VIII's time, you know, people only lived until they were about 40 years old. So the concept nowadays, we're all living so damn long that, you know, this expectation to maintain these relationships beyond 20, 30, 40, 50 years is very real. From listening to your clients, is there two or three aspects that you've noticed are the most important characteristics or behaviors that could change a marriage and make a marriage last in today's world?
God, that's a good question.
Yeah, it differs. It differs for men and women, I think. So I think men generally, when they have made the decision that the marriage is over, a lot of times it's because they maybe felt unheard. They maybe didn't feel that all they were contributing to the relationship by way of, you know, working was maybe going unnoticed, or they weren't feeling recognized. Whereas I think for a woman, the reasons can be different in that maybe she feels that she's having to do too much. So she's not only having to work to help put bread on the table, but she's looking after the children. And then society makes us also feel that we have to look a certain way and keep fit and have great skin and blah, 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 blah. So I think a lot of it can be just that lack of communication for the marriages that don't succeed. The marriages, I think, that do succeed have an ability, perhaps. And of course, I speak now not from work experience, because I don't get to speak to these couples that they're happily married.
Of course.
But for couples that maybe have an ability to be very transparent with their partner and to be able to say, this is how I'm feeling, actually. I'm not feeling heard or seen. I'm not feeling that even though I'm working 7 days a week and I'm putting money on the table and keeping a roof over our head, that you are discrediting that, perhaps. And having that ability to be confident and open, I think, goes for a solid relationship. Do you know what I mean? Whereas the people that I get to see aren't either able to have that conversation with their ex, or if they are having the conversation, it's not being listened to.
It's the skills of that, isn't it? And then, of course, you go down the marriage guidance route and all the rest of it. The one question, this is a difficult one, but I'm going to put this out there for the listeners. I'm just throwing it out there. Are we put on this earth, A, to stay with one person, in other words, to be married in that union? And are we put on this earth to be monogamous?
It's a great question, you know, and I get asked this question an awful lot, Richard. So I think, now this is just my personal view. This isn't an educated view at all. My personal view is, if you find your true soulmate, then good luck to you. And you are put on this earth to be with that soulmate. If you haven't found your true soulmate, then I suspect that monogamy is very difficult. Because it's not just about being in an intimate relationship with one person. It's about having that emotional, that spiritual connection, which is what a soulmate will bring you.
Okay. Last question before Roz comes in.
Yeah.
Is there only one soulmate for us out there? Is there only one? I know what I think, but I'm asking you.
No, there isn't. Because where you have a couple that perhaps the other, that their partner or their soulmate dies, I do think that in those instances, there's every reason to suspect you've got another soulmate there. Or perhaps where you have simply, a lot of my divorces end really amicably, actually, where they
do
have
they?
Been married for, yeah, absolutely. They're married for a long time and they've just grown apart and they wish to kiss each other goodbye, wish you all the best, but actually we're on a different path. And then you can have another soulmate, would be my belief.
Yeah, okay. But Tracy, that's a lot of who you are. That's a lot of the direction you will focus on.
It is.
And that's evident.
Yeah.
Other divorce lawyers will not. Now, just, I have a question. We were just going back a second. You were talking, I mean, effectively, the initial conversation was about the resentment that can form in relationships. And I think the first thing that destroys a marriage is honesty, and it can be the most tiny lie. It's a disconnection. And unless you maintain connection, so I have a huge belief that, you know, intimacy tends to be the last thing to go, the physical intimacy in a marriage. Way before that, the lies start. It's a little lie of not owning, or actually that bothers me, or I wish you could hug me more. I feel alone. The communication breaks down to a point where you end up with two strangers, or worse, brother and sister in a marriage. Is that something that resonates?
So if I'm honest with you, Rosie, I think that's probably 50% correct. I think where the parties, you're absolutely right, communication plays a big part in it, but it's also respect. If you are together from a very young age, you don't just wake up 20 years later and go, oh, this is a different person. You have gone through the journey together. You have observed each other's growth on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. You are able to see each other's strengths and weaknesses. Mm-hmm. Weaknesses become worse and strengths become worse, whichever way it might be. But I think for me, it's about respect. Now, respect is born, I believe, from a very good moral foundation. And yes, I hear what you're saying about take ownership and look into yourself. But you're not all to blame when you're in a relationship. There has to be an equal level, a mutual understanding from your spouse. And if they are growing at a different rate to you, we can then see that respect diminish on one side, I think.
Very true.
But there's so many things that can, there's so many obstacles and hurdles and great big craters that you can fall into in the course of a marriage. You know, let's be honest. I mean, in your view, children don't really help, do they? For most people, that they don't. I mean, we love them, of course we do, but they don't help. That's just another. Yeah. You think it's all going to be this utopia with these, you know, having young babies is hell on earth
for a
marriage. Well, you know, it wasn't easy for mine. And I know, doing what I do for a living, talking to many, 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 many women, you know, they'll say the same.
It's very true. Children will either make you or break you. I really believe that. You know, you'll either get through it or they will break you. Because, you know, typically in our society, mom will stay at home with the children, which means that she then can go through periods of isolation. She's not feeling as if she's surrounded by adults, no adult conversation during the day. It's a 24/7, very thankless job in the early days. So she is built, and it's very life changing for a woman. You know, you're turned up on your head, your body changes, all of a sudden you're not in the working environment anymore. But equally for the man, you know, the financial pressure is then put on him to be able to provide.
Yes.
And he's expected when he walks through the door, well, could you change that one? And I'm going to bath that one.
Yes.
And he's thinking, well, hang on a minute. I've just been working since.
Yes, exactly.
So again, they will make you or break you. But it goes back to my belief that that's where the communication's important. You've got to find time to come together and be totally transparent. And be able to talk to your partner without it coming across as blame. Can I tell you about my day today? I'm not blaming you.
Yeah.
I just need you to hear how I'm feeling. And actually, you could ease my burden if you would perhaps pick up the milk on the way home. Or you would ease my burden if you would bring me up a coffee in the morning before you go. That would mean the world to me. And I think what happens is we get so wrapped up in the work, the children, the school runs, you know, just society in general, that we lose that ability.
Tracy, sorry, Roz, darling, because this is just absolutely just so important to me to ask you this, because So fast forwarding, so you are confronted with a lady, a woman that's coming to you. I'm just using a woman. We can use a man as another yeah. example. A woman comes to you and she doesn't know where the hell the money is because he's been working all this time. She doesn't trust anything. And it's all very well because he wanted her to stay at home and that's what she's done. And she's brought up these beautiful children and all the rest of it. Do you? And then suddenly she thinks, shit, I've lost my independence here. I don't know anything. Yeah. And I don't trust what he's been doing with it. And now I'm facing a divorce and I come out of this divorce. I've lost all my confidence to go back and actually pick up and find the woman that I was. And actually, for a lot of women that talk to me, they've lost that and they never get that back. Do you advise a woman in today's world to carry on working and keep a form of independence through that marriage?
Absolutely. 100%. Never relinquish, whether you're male or female, because we've got a lot of stay-at-home dads out there. Never relinquish your financial independence, because the reality is that we need finances. We need finances, whether you're single, in a relationship, whatever it might be, you need an independent financial income stream. And what that may look like when you have children is even a small part-time job.
Absolutely.
Just something that is yours, yes. So that you are not losing your identity. Or it may be, I'm going to stay at home and have the children, but I'm going to partake in some study. While I'm here, I was pregnant with my fourth child while I was doing my law degree. And while I was feeding at 2 a.m, I would be flicking through a couple of chapters and maybe, you know, refreshing on torts or equity or so. But it was mine. Do you know what I mean? It was something that I was doing for self-development, which is useful because then when the children go to school, you're then able to get a little bit of yourself back.
Yeah. There is a real movement nowadays for women to be this hyper independent financially, you know, men are almost, you know, not needed anymore. And I'm very not like that. So I've always run my own business. I've always been independent my own ways and I'm very self-responsible. However, I absolutely love men. I you know, some of them are nightmares. The vast majority are wonderful. And I've worked with men my entire career and always been their boss, ironically. My thoughts are that, you know, I love a man opening a door for me. I love feeling like a woman. How are you noticing in the marriages, there's this huge pressure in today's world where women and young kids, you know, 23-year-olds, 20-year-olds, 25, have this expectation that they've almost got to be the man, and the man can't be the man and the woman can't be the woman. Do you see what I'm saying? Is that
showing
up in divorces?
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's about, look, nothing to excess is good. Nothing to excess is good. So, yes, you're right, Rosie. When I get some women come to me and they're very career-driven and, you know, they've sort of had their children, but they've put them into nursery, nothing wrong with that either. But they've put all this pressure on themselves to be equal to the man. And I think it's damaging to our mental psyche as a woman.
I agree.
But it's also damaging to your male partner.
Yes, I agree.
Because actually, a male intuitively wants to be king of his family. You know, he wants to be seen as the provider for his family and the protector of his family. So, and to all the women out there who are listening, I'm not saying be subservient to your male partner, whether it be your husband or your boyfriend, but just acknowledge how your growth will impact upon them.
So I'm just going to pull you up just one second. All of us, I've just realized we're talking about, you know, heterosexual marriages. Can I touch on, what happens when you've got a gay marriage that goes wrong? And we're talking about these different roles. I mean, is this a whole different can of worms?
It is, because especially if I'm doing a same-sex marriage for, let's say, two men. Going back to the example of, let's just stick with a heterosexual at the moment, where you get a heterosexual couple, the man is very driven to protecting his pension.
Yes.
And the woman's very driven to maybe keeping her home.
Yeah.
So we have to acknowledge straight away that we have two different sets of needs and wants from a divorce. Where we're doing a same-sex divorce, so let's say of two men, it can be difficult because they're both after ultimately the same thing. Perhaps they're not that bothered about the home, but they're both hell-bent on keeping the business that they've grown together, or maybe the pension that they've paid into together. And then I've done lots of same-sex marriages or divorces for women where maybe we have a massive battle over the children. We're not bothered about the money and the house, but actually both of them want the children. And I think for the family lawyer, wow, it requires a recognition and then a different application of your skill set. You have to recognize ultimately the emotional framework, I think, mm-hmm, of that individual and where they're coming from, mm-hmm, to be able to help manage their, mm-hmm, expectations, which is really important, but then get them the result that
Tracy, just to pick you up on that, the same sex female marriage, divorcing, that is such an incredible point you've just made, because it's makes much sense. More cut and dry, isn't it, with the male and the female, because usually the women, on the whole, 90%, correct me if I'm wrong, keep the children, right? What on earth happens correct, with yeah. two women? How on earth do you decide for that?
Yeah. Well, ultimately, you're always going to be trying to do what's in the best interest of the children. If you go back to my example of both of them want the children, that's all they're looking for. So we're just going to look at, well, okay, during the marriage, who was the main caregiver? Clearly, one of you worked, one of you stayed at home, or maybe both of you worked, in which case are we looking at a shared care relationship? Mm. And this ties nicely back to my previous comment about some colleagues who actually will take what their client tells them that they want and will just go after that, as opposed to sitting down and thinking, well, hang on a minute, I hear what you want, but if we can get real for a second, chances are what the judge is going to want us to do is agree shared care, or agree that, you know, children stay with the main carer and see you alternate weekends. And it goes back to that identifying what's in their best interest, the children's best interest, as well as the two moms.
Yes.
I know my mother, bless her, used us as a weapon. So when she divorced my father, us, the children, which are often used as a weapon in some marriages, my father never got to see us. And when I divorced, I was very conscious of that. And I was very conscious of this concept that, you know, the woman gets the children. I've had to be, I was very aware that, you know, I watched in the industry I was in for years, I watched many a man go through a divorce, and my God, the impact on them, read the children.
Absolutely.
The other thing I was going to say was, I just want to throw it out there, in this country and in places like America, there's a huge percentage of family businesses. Like it's something like 70% in this country and 90% in America of businesses that are actually family businesses. Would you say that one of the big issues that marriages run into when they're doing business together, or even if they're coming home and she's looked after the children all day, he's exhausted, he's just done, you know, his best for the family, competitiveness.
So let's say you have a couple that are growing a business together. Look at the roles that they have. Let's not have one that's the boss of the other.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Let's say in my business, I'm the owner of the business. My husband isn't this, by the way. But, you know, there's no way I would want my husband to join my business as an admin person. Because ultimately, I'm his boss. So that competition, I think, is very unhealthy. But where you are maybe in the same business but have completely different roles and are very competitive in your want for the business, you both want to push the business forward and grow the business, and therefore one of you might work really late nights but the other one wants to do really early mornings, that's healthy, I think.
Tracy, I want to just lighten it up a little bit and bring this right back to you,
yeah.
Tracy Maloney. So you must be experiencing a lot of stress through these people that you're talking to and you're acting for. A lot of tears, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
You know, people are coming to you with perhaps not enough money for you. How on earth do you leave that in the office and don't take that home?
I think when you've done it for so long, you become very confident in your ability to fix or not fix. The ones that you can fix and get a great result for gives you such a euphoric feeling that it sustains you to go on to the next one. The ones that you can't fix, you recognize quite early on, this, we're not going to get a good result here. So you almost learn to manage your own expectations as well as those of your clients.
Tracy, thank you. And I'll thank from Richard too. It's been an absolute pleasure. And I'm just so glad that we could have you on this podcast.
Tracy Maloney, Legal Queen, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks once again for listening to this episode of V for Visionaries, the how-to podcast.
We would love it if you could take a moment to click the follow button and hit 5 stars, as it really helps grow the show.
We'll see you in the next episode of V for Visionaries.